Today we are continuing through Matthew chapter 27. We are looking at the second most important thing that ever happened on this planet. The first most important thing was the resurrection. Today, as we look at the crucifixion, we need to keep in mind, although Marion told me that downstairs, she's teaching on the resurrection, so she's like kind of a week off from where we are. But the Bible tells us that the crucifixion would have been meaningless, except as a tragedy, if Jesus had not risen from the dead. If he hadn't risen from the dead, his sacrifice on the cross would not have saved us from our sins. We'd still be in our sins. So what we're looking at today is just unspeakably important, but it's what happened 3 days later that is what transformed the world through people that used to be chicken, people that were, some of them, probably most of them, uneducated people. But when they saw this man who they had watched put to death, breathe his last breath, and then they saw him 3 days later walking around, then what in the world would you ever be afraid of ever again in your whole life? Somebody talked to me a couple of months ago. They're not here anymore, so I don't know. Maybe if they listen to this, they'll be embarrassed, but I won't. So I won't mention their name. Someone who was raised in the Catholic Church, where Jesus is still on the cross, and she had a dream, a nightmare actually, of Jesus on the cross, hovering over her with a scowl on her face, on his face, ready to smash her to smithereens, and woke up in. And it made me angry at any religious system that uses the cross to make people feel guilty. I grew up in a church like that, where people look at the cross, and the first thought that is put in their minds by the religious leaders is, look what you did. Look what you made Jesus have to do. Jesus didn't have to do it. It's true that we were so bad that he had to die for us. But it's also true that we were so loved that he was glad to do it. That it was God's idea to redeem fallen people so that we could be with him for all of eternity in intimacy. And Jesus was willing to bear the pain and the shame and the separation from God for one reason, because of love. In Hebrews, it says, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. What was the joy set before him? Well, the church I was raised in before I came to Calvary Chapel, the joy was the glory that he was going to have. Okay, well, let's just get this cross thing out of the way, and then I'll be in heaven forever. Everybody will be praising me and worshiping me, and that's what he did it for, was for the glory. But that's actually kind of twisted, isn't it? Because in Philippians, it says that he laid his glory down and voluntarily came. What was the joy that caused him to endure? It was you and me being able to raise our hands and say, amazing love, how can it be that you, my King, would die for me? It was you and I being able to sing, I'm yours. I've been bought with life so precious. That was the joy. The joy was an unbridgeable gap being bridged, so that we could be his bride forever. I remember when I saw the movie, The Passion of the Christ, which, as I said last week, they've produced a less bloody version of it, and that kind of makes me angry, because that first one was so historically accurate. It was a very bloody event. And not one drop of that precious blood was wasted from God's perspective. But I remember when I saw the movie and we walked out, some of us went to see it together, and we were all sharing our thoughts, and some people were crying, and I felt like dancing. I had never felt in my whole life so loved. Some of it revolved around one scene, which is not even really a biblical scene. It was a little bit of poetic license with Jesus bearing the cross. But do you remember the scene where he's carrying the cross towards Golgotha and he's going down this narrow street, and you see back through the crowd, you see Satan sort of fading in and out, watching, gloating. And there's this cinematic license where Mary, standing off down a side street, looks straight down and sees him, and she flashes back on when he was a little boy and he fell, and like any good mom, she just ran to rescue him and snatched him up in her arms. But as she watched, he fell beneath the cross. He's beaten to a pulp by the flogging, and people are laughing at him, and she runs, realizing she can't fix this like she fixed everything when he was little. I'm getting some feedback, Wayne. Maybe turn off the monitor. So here's the scene that I love. He looks up and sees his mom and reaches his bloody hand up and he puts it on the side of her face. And there's this smile in his eyes. Is he okay? Lord, help Josh. He puts his bloody hand on the side of his mother's face and he says, "See, Mother, I'm making all things new." And there's a smile, and then he grabs the cross and he hugs the cross and he stands up. And I remember just being wiped out when I saw that, because it was joy and love that motivated his endurance. So as we look at the crucifixion today, that's my prayer. I don't know that you could watch somebody suffer for you because out of love and then not feel guilty for every rotten thing that you ever did. But that's not why he did it. He did it so that we could be clean and with him. And I will admit that fear of judgment is a good deterrent, but it is not good glue. The best glue to keep people close to Jesus is love. And so let's look at it today. Matthew 27. We stopped last week with a sequence of Pilate errors. Pilate making horrible tactical blunders simply because of what a weakling he was. We're going to read through the account of the crucifixion and Jesus' death in Matthew, but I would like for you to keep your finger over in John 19, because John, writing so much later, fills in details that are good details, and we will look at it at least a little bit today. I don't want to belabor it, but I think it's noteworthy the fact that Jesus was even crucified instead of being stoned by the Jews. They wanted to kill him, but they were not allowed to carry out a death sentence. It's interesting. I was thinking about this today. Remember when they killed Stephen in the book of Acts? They weren't as afraid of the Romans. They got away with murder with Jesus, so they weren't really afraid of the Romans, and they just put Stephen to death by stoning him. It was illegal. They would have done that with Jesus. The problem they had with doing it with Jesus is lots of people really liked him. They had to make it look like the Romans did it. And of course, that whole sequence of people making all their free will choices and the will of the religious leaders being thwarted and being forced to let the Romans deal with it and blah, 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 all of that stuff wound up fulfilling many, many specific prophecies hundreds of years earlier, before the Romans ever invented their specific form of execution, prophesied in detail in several Psalms and in Isaiah 53. Does God know what's happening? Yeah, he does. Does the devil sneak anything past him? No, he does not. And so one of the reasons I wanted to look at John besides looking at Matthew is there's just so many specific fulfillments of things that were said that nobody understood at the time because it didn't exist what they were talking about. So it's a fabulous unfolding to me. And today we get to see Jesus say, it's done, mission accomplished, it's finished. And we'll talk about that as well. We stopped last week, I believe, at verse 26 of Matthew 27. Pilate had Jesus flogged, and we talked a little bit about what a gruesome thing that was. It was not normally part of crucifixion. The other Gospels tell us that Pilate had Jesus ripped to shreds in the flogging, hoping that that would appease the bloodlust of the religious leaders and that he wouldn't have to be crucified. And it didn't work. Many people did not even survive flogging. It was so brutal. Jesus did, but it did hasten his death on the cross. Crucifixion normally could take, as you know, many, many days for a person to die. It only took 6 hours for it to kill Jesus. And some of that had to have been because of being so weakened by the flogging. So verse 26, he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him, put a scarlet robe on him, and then twisted together a crown of thorns, and it's strong in the Greek, pounded it on his head. And they put a staff in his right hand and knelt in front of him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. Why is that? Well, it pounded the nails in, the thorns in, even farther. And after they had mocked him, they took off the robe, put his own clothes on him, and they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out of the city, they met a man from Cyrene, which is in North Africa, named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. The other Gospels say, John says that Jesus started carrying the cross. Luke says that he was so weak, he fell. And so they conscripted Simon from North Africa. And Simon carried the cross the rest of the way. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means Skull Hill, or the place of the skull. Still looks like it. Remember, Wayne? Remember when we were standing there looking at that place, and they told us that there had been some sort of a seismic event and a big chunk of the mountain had fallen off, and they said, and it looked even more like a skull before, after all these millennia. Took him outside of town to a place called the Place of the Skull, and there they offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, drugged wine, which would have been a painkiller, basically. But after tasting it, he refused to drink it. Might write in your margins why. If you were going to go into childbirth, women, ladies, and you had a choice between any kind of a painkiller that was safe or just doing it, you know, without a painkiller, which would you choose? Aren't you grateful for anesthetic? Why did Jesus turn it down? When they had crucified him, there's just four words that describe just the most brutal way that humans have ever invented to kill somebody. Matthew just uses a few words to say it. They divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Two robbers were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. And those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God." Don't you bet there was about a million angels reaching for their swords right then? I mean, the sound of angelic swords being, you know, grasped. Please turn off your cell phone. At this kind of a taunt. In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself." Boy, they had no idea how true that was. It wasn't that he wasn't able to save himself, but if he was going to save others, he was going to have to not save himself. "He's the King of Israel," they said in a mocking way. "Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Well, let God rescue him now if he wants him, because he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" In the same way, the robbers who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. I don't get that. I mean, here you are, you're suffering for your crimes. Why insult another guy? I just don't get. One of them did repent later. There's so much in this. From the sixth hour until the ninth hour, darkness came over all of the land. That's from noon till 3 p.m. By the way, there's a Roman astronomer who recorded this in a Roman science manual. On this specific day in history, there was an abnormal, he called it the most total eclipse the world had ever seen, because the stars came out. Interesting. That's a non-biblical source backing this statement up. About the ninth hour, that is about 3 p.m., Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" That, by the way, is the cry of a sinner, not the cry of a saint. When some of those standing there heard this, they said, he's calling Elias. Our word Elijah is distant from his name. His name was Elias. So obviously you can see the similarity. John 19 says that at this point Jesus cried out that he was thirsty. Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge, and he filled it with wine, put it on a stick, and offered it to Jesus to drink. An act of kindness, actually. Not drugged wine, like the painkiller before, just something to quench his thirst. And the rest of the people said, "No, leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice. The other Gospels, a couple of them tell us what he said. Combination of Aramaic and Greek, one word, tetelestai, which means it's finished or mission accomplished. When he had cried out, a shout of triumph, when he had cried out again, tetelestai, in a loud voice, he dismissed his spirit. I did something about that. I just really like spirit. You may go. I'm finished with you. Or this body's finished with you. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Underline that phrase. That is a really important statement. A whole chain reaction of things took place. The earth shook. Rocks split. Tombs broke open. That's what would have happened, the way they built their tombs and those hillsides and unstable ground, the earthquake. busted them open. Bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. Just the chain reaction of the power released that came out of the tombs, parenthetically, that came out of the tombs, and after Jesus' resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. Her name was Salome. We find in John's gospel that Mary, Jesus' mother, was also there. Three Marys. Must have been a little bit confusing. Where are the demon casters and the big brave bodyguards who all claimed they'd never forsake Jesus? Where are they? They're hiding. Pretty much the only ones that stuck around were the women. And they came basically to just see if there was anything they could do. I just love that kind of heart. I understand the running away. I do. And Jesus didn't seem to be too affected by it because he told them that that's what they were going to do. That's Matthew's account. That's as far as we will get today. Next week we'll look at the burial and the resurrection. The good part of the story, or the best part of the story. Turn over to John 19, and I want to read John's account of this and look at some of the details. John takes about 10 verses to cover what Matthew says in 2 verses, and he leaves a lot of details. So John writing this much later, it's almost like the Lord said, "You know, John, before you die, you're the last eyewitness. The other guys left some stuff out. Why don't you write all this down? I'll help you. I'll remind you." So I love John's gospel. I love the perspective that John gives to things just because of the relationship that he had with Jesus. He was one of the guys that ran away. They all did. He came back. And so let's look at this account, beginning with verse 17 of John 19. "And so the soldiers took charge of Jesus. Carrying his own cross, he went out to the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. And here they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side, Jesus in the middle." It's interesting. It's an interesting detail. The Romans were not reading their Bibles and reading the Old Testament and reading Isaiah 53 and say, "Okay, how are we going to do this? We want to be sure we get all the details right. Let's put this guy over here. Jesus, you're in the middle. Let's put this guy over here." No, they just a bunch of people filled with anger, the soldiers drunken and bored, making free will choices, and detail after detail after detail are fulfilled from several of the Psalms and from Isaiah 53. And Isaiah 53 said that he would be killed and numbered among, or literally the Hebrew word is in the middle of, criminals. Gee, what a coincidence. Well, no, not these kind of details are not a coincidence. Most of the scenes, including Mel Gibson's rendition in The Passion, show Jesus carrying a whole entire cross. That's highly unlikely. Normally, the uprights were already on by the side of the road, on the main road into town. The Romans loved to crucify people on the main road into the main gate of the town. They considered it was a really good deterrent against rebellion. It's like you're on your way into town to do business, and they're hanging miscreants up on the crosses saying, this is what we do to people who fight against us. And quite barbaric. They weren't the only culture that did that. So they would have the uprights already put in place, but they did force the criminals to go from the place of judgment unto the place of execution, carrying the cross piece in their arms, on their shoulders. And of course, most of the time, these were men who were semi-healthy. Simply, the only probably ill health that they had suffered before they were crucified was that they'd been in prison. But Jesus had been beaten with that cat of nine tails thing, that scourge that had curved pieces of metal and bone in it, that when you hook it into the body and jerk it back, it pulls out chunks of flesh. A few hours earlier, at the Last Supper, Jesus broke up a piece of bread, as was common to do in the Passover celebration, and he passed it out, and he says, from now on, when you take this broken bread, this represents my body, which is broken for you. They had no idea what he was talking about then.